This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Dearing, and we start today on Capitol Hill. The 118th Congress is up and running, and it's the most diverse representation yet. It's also divided, with the state's entire Democratic House delegation now in the minority, despite Democrats holding the Senate and the White House. Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley of the 7th Congressional District was the Commonwealth's first Black woman elected to Congress in 2018, and she's been pushing Massachusetts priorities and boundaries since. She joins us now to talk about this divided Congress and several important news items of the day. Congresswoman, welcome back and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Tiziana. Good to be with you.
So lots of important things on the mind today. Lots to talk about. Pretty soon, our attention is all going to turn to the weather because it's going to get nasty around here tomorrow. A lot of snow and slush. But we've had very little snow, Congresswoman, and I love it. I'm wondering, are you a snow person? Are you missing the snow, rooting for 4 inches tomorrow, or is it just fine with you?
I'm somewhere in the middle. You know, I lean towards cold weather, you know, just in full transparency, Tiziana, because I like winter fashion, you know, so I like boots and gloves and black and, you know, all those things. But, you know, shoveling, you know, it's some good exercise, but it is an exertion. But, you know, our 14-year-old still loves the snow. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you've got kids, you got to be rooting for it for them.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Well, we will see what happens tomorrow. In the meantime, there's a lot happening today. I want to talk about the Congress, but I've got a couple of news of the day questions for you. Okay. The Boston Globe revealing yesterday afternoon that Boston Mayor Michelle Wu is floating a proposal on rent control, which we knew she was going to do. She said she'd have a proposal out this year. Looks like it's currently considering capping rent increases at up to 10% every year. I'm aware of how much of your district is in the city of Boston. So any reactions to this initial proposal, which has been confirmed by the Wu administration?
Well, I've long been a proponent of rent stabilization. Again, I represent one of the most marginalized and unequal districts, and that's true across all outcomes and data points. And that's true when it comes to affordable housing. We know that housing is a critical determinant of health. And because of my longstanding advocacy and work in the public health space, I've always been an advocate for housing that is affordable and safe and clean. And moreover, it's an incredible time to be alive, to call the city of Boston, to call this Commonwealth home. And we want to retain the diversity of our neighborhoods, which have made this city so great and have made so many contributions. And so we have to address the impacts of gentrification and displacement. We have to address the impacts of the work of still recovering from a pandemic-induced recession, rising costs, and stagnant wages. So for all those reasons, I've been supportive of that policy.
And I'll just note for our listeners that Boston Mayor Michelle Wu will be with us at Radio Boston on Monday, and we'll ask her that question directly as well. So next topic, as we just hit a few items of news of the day, Congresswoman Pressley, this morning the U.S. reached its debt limit. That's known as the debt ceiling. Secretary of the Treasury Janet Yellen has said she can exercise extraordinary measures sometime into June, and then we will be at a point of crisis. We know that especially more hardline Republicans have said we will not increase the debt limit without serious concessions around budget cuts, for example. Where are you on this subject in this moment, and what do you anticipate is going to play out, let's say, in the next week on this subject?
Well, I won't make any predictions, but, you know, certainly I agree with the Biden administration on this. This has always been a procedural vote. I think the Republicans continue to offer more of the same. They don't really have an agenda that is aligned with the needs of the American people. They want to cut Social Security and cut Medicare and other safety net pardon me, programs. And these things are not up for negotiation. And that's not because I say that. It's because the American people make plain daily how important this is. And so, you know, look, the government, we've got to pay our bills. And we need to be true to our practices. And in the past, this has just been a procedural vote. So,
in a standoff more than a decade ago between Congress and the Obama administration, there were real impacts on things like the stock market, credit rating, et cetera, even before, right, even just in the reality of a standoff. And I wonder if there's anything unique to Massachusetts or any specific concerns you have about Massachusetts and our finances here if we wind up in a standoff that even just scares the financial markets, Congresswoman.
You know, again, I don't want to get too far down the road here. Tiziana, again, I think this has always been a procedural vote. We should move accordingly and not negotiate on those things that are essential for all the reasons that I've enumerated and you did just there. And it's because of the fragility and these consequential times that we find ourselves in, while I look forward to the next 2 years of making the affirmative case for why Democrats need to get that gavel back and be in the majority, because we are centering the American people. We are we govern with compassion and not contempt or callousness, nor do we govern with chaos, which is what this 118th Congress, how the Republicans came out the gate with this speakership battle and then advanced a rules package with three anti-choice, anti-healthcare bills, and also anti-worker policies, you know, efforts to stop congressional staff from unionizing, gutting the Office of Congressional Ethics. And again, they want to cut Social Security, Medicare, and those critical safety net programs. So this, how we started the 118th Congress, I think has been a sobering look into what we can expect for the next 2 years. The good news is I'm battle tested, and I'm ready to do the work of harm mitigation while also working earnestly and creatively and diligently with the White House and also with the corner office here in Massachusetts to ensure that we are meeting the needs of the people who have entrusted us with this responsibility.
So let's stay in this space between the 118th Congress and being battle-tested as a woman who broke ground here in the Commonwealth with your representation even. You know, Pew Research Center calling this the most diverse House and Senate yet. Women make up 153 of the 500 voting and non-voting members. 133 members identify as Black, Hispanic, Asian American, American Indian, or Alaska Native. I do want to note, Pew also says 80% of the people who identify among those categories as people of color are Democrats in Congress. 20% are Republicans. Republicans are in charge. You've just laid out some real frustration at the start of this Congress with the positions that Republicans are taking. You have brought an agenda that you have been very clear as representative of the diverse constituency that you represent. I'm also mindful that we've got a completely Democratic delegation who has been in power for the last several years and is not now. When you talk with other members of the delegation, when you think about your priorities, where are you concerned that this change in power in the House affects what Massachusetts specifically needs?
Well, first, I just want to affirm the progress, the ways in which this is an indicator of progress and the commitment by the Democratic Party and our caucus that we do have historic and diverse, unprecedented representation in our Democratic leadership and also in this Democratic caucus. And I think for those reasons, we are better to more effectively center the needs of the people because a more representative government always more effectively meets the needs of a representative citizenry. Again, that being said, if how you start is how you'll finish, how the 118th Congress started under a Republican majority, chaotic, and I think really underscoring their inability to govern, to lead in this moment with effectiveness, with a real policy agenda. I think what they have proven time and time again is that they have more contempt for the American people, while the Democrats have proved that we have compassion for the American people, or we're centering those things that matter most to them. So I'm going to continue to, I'm only that much more emboldened, Tiziana. I don't have the time to be cynical or apathetic or even to be worried. We are still doing the work of ensuring that we have an equitable and robust recovery from this pandemic. We still very much need to address our affordable housing crisis, have to continue to fight for those investments in multimodal and public transit, because that supports all our other goals, our climate goals, our housing goals, our racial and economic justice goals. I am not giving up fighting for paid leave or universal child care or home and community-based services for the disabled and elderly, or a host of other investments that I hear from my constituents each and every day are issues of consequence to them. And so we do still have the White House, and I've worked very closely with them as the chair of the Abortion Rights and Access Task Force, and as an original co-sponsor of the Women's Health Protection Act, which would codify Roe on the federal level. That bill has passed the House twice. To ensure that we're doing everything possible to ensure access to healthcare, and abortion care is healthcare, and ballots throughout the country. We saw states affirm that this is important to them as well. And I want to applaud the FDA for heeding our calls to make available medication abortion at our local pharmacies. So I'll continue to work on issues like that with the White House and also with the Healey Driscoll administration. I was a lead negotiator in the student debt cancellation, and certainly we want to make sure that we're making good on that promise, and we'll see what the courts do. But again, Republicans are playing politics with people's lives, and while they are playing with people's lives, Democrats continue to change and save people's lives. And so that's the work I'll be focused on in partnership with my colleagues, but with this Democratic White House, and also with my corner office here in the Commonwealth.
So a couple of other things I want to get to. You have limited time, I know, and so do we. We've got a couple of minutes left. I do want to come back home. We've been talking about representation. I am thinking about the conversation this week on the embrace. You gave an impassioned speech last week at the unveiling. I know you're aware of criticisms across the country in both white and black communities about that statue. Some people love it. Some people see it as obscene. Some people are frustrated that it doesn't fully represent the visages and presence of Martin Luther King Jr. and Coretta Scott King. I know you've been in a lot of rooms on this. Do you have a reaction to the criticism?
The Embrace Memorial is a powerful tribute to the love of Martin and Coretta and their legacy and a changing Boston. And I'm not going to give oxygen to any bad faith criticism of it by people. You know, I think it's important that we embrace the social justice and civil rights movement that was initiated and led by Dr. King and Coretta. And I take great pride in the fact that their love was forged here in this district and ultimately birthed a movement, one that we are still very much in. And I think my very election and that of Andrea Campbell and so many others is evidence of that progress. But also there's much more work that remains to be done. What we need to embrace is not just the power of symbolism, but also the necessity of systemic change and impact. And that's the work I'm going to be focused on every day. You know, this is, it's important that if we really want to change the narrative of Boston and our Commonwealth writ large, that we change these outcomes, that we close these inequities and disparities and injustices across all outcomes, from economic justice to healthcare and transit access to education equity. And that's the work that I remain squarely focused on.
Last question for you. On the healthcare front, you joined with Congresswoman Lori Trahan, Catherine Clark, and Senator Elizabeth Warren a letter last week to Johnson & Johnson asking for specific information, raising concerns and accountability about the lack of access to children's Tylenol, children's Motrin. Your office says you're expecting or you've asked for a response from them by tomorrow. Do you think you'll get one? And what else can you do to help with this shortage, Congresswoman?
Well, the shortage of infant and children's Tylenol and Motrin in Massachusetts and across the country is unacceptable. It's unconscionable. This is a status quo that can't stand. We're in the midst of a challenging cold and flu season. Parents with sick children visiting store after store being met with empty shelves. And so this was an effort initiated by my office. We led this letter, and Senator Warren, Congresswoman Trahan, and Whip Clark joined us. And I am grateful for the prompt response by Johnson & Johnson, but still unsatisfied. I think we're making progress, but there's still more road to walk here. And we're going to continue to demand answers and do everything we can to address these shortages.
Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley of the 7th Congressional District, Happy New Year to you. I hope we'll get to talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you.